Very early in the morning, the chief priests, with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the Sanhedrin, reached a decision. They bound Jesus, led him away, and turned him over to Pilate. "Are you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate. "Yes, it is as you say," Jesus replied. The chief priests accused him of many things. So again, Pilate asked him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they're accusing you of." But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. Now, it was the custom at the feast to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man named Barabbas was in the prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising. The crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did. "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate, knowing it was out of envy that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to him. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. "What shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews?" Pilate asked them. "Crucify him," they shouted. "Why, what crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them, and he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified.
The theme for tonight's teaching is Pilate on trial. And we tend to think of the passage that Dorcas just read for us as being the trial of Jesus. But when we examine it closely, we can see that Jesus was in full command of the situation. And that Pilate was the one floundering. And much of tonight's teaching is based on Douglas Phillips' teaching on this passage, which I found to be very close to my own thinking and understanding. And new avenues of thinking were opened up to me as I prepared, and I'm passing some of them on to you. The theme, Pilate on trial, was given to me. Wasn't my choosing, but it made me look at the passage from a different perspective. And it's good to be given a theme as well as a passage, because it makes us look at a passage from a perspective that we wouldn't normally look at it. And as I looked at Mark chapter 15, I came to realise that I was more like Pilate than Jesus. Which was a bit frightening until I got my head around it and started to examine it and compared it with my own life. In Matthew chapter 26 and verses 57 to 68, we find that Jesus, after he had been betrayed and arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, was taken to Caiaphas, the high priest, who was with the whole of the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin had convened in order to find a false testimony against Jesus. Jesus remained silent when he was questioned, and he was found guilty of blasphemy. Now, the Sanhedrin did not have the power to execute a death sentence, because the land was occupied by the Romans. So charges had to be brought against Jesus that attracted a Roman death sentence. And this brought Jesus face to face with Pilate. And the trial was probably the most honest that Jesus would face, as Pilate discovered that Jesus was innocent. The actions that Pilate took was to try to appease the crowd that had gathered and to save Jesus' life. If we look at the passage and the comparative passages in Matthew chapter 27, Luke chapter 23 and John chapters 18 and 19, we find that Pilate made numerous attempts to set Jesus free. Now, a transformation took place when Jesus was before Pilate. It was a transformation as to who was actually on trial. When we come face to face with Jesus, a transformation takes place. And Jesus is not the one transformed. We see it dramatically in Saul the persecutor, who had an encounter with Jesus whilst on the way to Damascus. Saul was actually on his way to arrest those who were called the followers of the way at that time. But he was transformed so dramatically that he went on to write a good chunk of the New Testament. Outside of the Bible, we get John Newton and many others, even today, give testimony of the difference Jesus has made in their lives. There are those here tonight who can speak of the transformation to their lives after coming face to face with Jesus. And if that doesn't include you, then I pray that tonight is the night when your life is transformed. Meeting Jesus transforms us. As Jesus spoke to Pilate, the focus changed from Jesus speaking of his innocence to Pilate making his decision as to whether or not Jesus was who he said he was. It was Pilate who had to determine what the truth is. James Stewart, not James Stewart the actor, but another James Stewart, wrote, "Everyone who studies the narrative has the strange feeling that the tables are being turned before their very eyes. What they are seeing is not Jesus on trial before the crowd, but Pilate on trial before Jesus. As Pilate stands with the Son of God in those hours, it is as if Jesus' searchlight is probing his soul, revealing his true character for all the world to see. Every soul stands where Pilate stood at some time in their life, face to face with Jesus in the place of decision." We have to make a decision when we come face to face with Jesus. Now, Pilate was not one of Rome's best governors. Douglas Phillips tells us that Pilate had received his position through marrying Claudia Procula, who was a relative of the Emperor Tiberius. Douglas Phillips also tells us that Pilate served as governor for 10 years, with Jesus' trial coming in the fourth year. And Pilate was responsible for three things in Judah. Firstly, for keeping law and order. Secondly, handing out justice. And thirdly, collecting taxes. And the Jewish leaders knew that their charge against Jesus would have no impact on Pilate. He hated them as much as they hated him. The Jewish people didn't want the Romans ruling over them, and Pilate could think of better places to live. The Jewish leaders needed to bring different charges against Jesus, charges that Pilate could not ignore. And they came up with three. The first was not paying taxes to Rome. The second was claiming to be a king, the king of the Jews. And the third was stirring up the people all around the country. Each of these charges, if found guilty, attracted the death penalty. But the only charge that concerned Pilate was the second one. He could control the collection of taxes, and he could put down rebellions with force if necessary. Verse 5 tells us that Pilate was amazed that Jesus remained silent as charge after charge was brought against him. And in verse 2, Pilate asked Jesus bluntly if he claims to be a king, the charge that bothered him. Also in verse 2, Jesus implies, "You have said it." And this short response is also recorded at Matthew chapter 27, verse 11, and Luke chapter 23, verse 3. However, in John chapter 18, verses 33 to 38, we find a much longer conversation between Pilate and Jesus. A conversation which convinced Pilate that Jesus was not a threat to the Romans. Jesus claimed to be a king of a spiritual kingdom and had no aspirations for a physical kingdom. Pilate then had to battle a second question. What is truth? And this is a question that you and I have to battle many times. In this modern world, with so much information being thrown at us, all claiming to be the truth, we need to ask ourselves, what is truth? Pilate knew what the truth was, as do we. We know the truth by studying the Word of God, the Bible, a book that the world has rejected. Pilate knew the truth through his conversation with Jesus, that Jesus was innocent and there was no reason why he couldn't be set free. The real question was, would Pilate respond with courage, or would he bow to the pressure of the great crowd that had gathered wanting Jesus executed? We face the same question. Will we defend God with courage when those around us deny him? Or will we melt into the background as Peter did and claim to know nothing about him? It's a big temptation to keep our heads down. And many of us, if not all of us, have been in situations, I've certainly, I've been in situations where it's been easier to keep our heads down and just quietly get on with things and let people say what they want. And Pilate knew the truth, but was fighting the temptation to appease the crowd. To know what is true and not to stand for it is an act of cowardice. I must admit that I'm one of the world's biggest cowards. When I was a very new preacher back in the 1980s, I preached at what was then called the Bible Pattern Church. How I managed to get in there, I don't know. When I looked around the congregation, I realised that there were three Pentecostal pastors in present. Two of them were Wilf Hibbert and Henry George, both of whom I respected very highly. And I was petrified. One thing I've discovered, though, when I do something that's frightening the life out of me, I find that when I come to do it, I quite often enjoy it. And I try to remember that when I face a situation which intimidates me. It doesn't make it any easier, but it's good to remember. Pilate declared the trial irrelevant. John chapter 18 tells us that Jesus admits to Pilate that he is king of the Jews, but that his kingdom is a spiritual kingdom and not a physical or political kingdom. Pilate decided that Jesus was not a danger to Rome, as the Jewish leaders charged. This, however, did not satisfy the crowd, as they claimed that Jesus was leading a rebellion against Rome, starting in Galilee. Pilate then tried to change the venue. Jesus was from Galilee, and Pilate saw an opportunity to rid himself of the trial by declaring that it was Herod's responsibility rather than his. And Luke chapter 23, verse 7 says, finding that he, that is Jesus, was under Herod's jurisdiction, he, Pilate, sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem during those days. Herod was the same tyrant who had John the Baptist beheaded. And he had no love lost for the Jewish people. However, he was caught in the same dilemma as Pilate. He didn't want to be looked on negatively by Rome. Also, he didn't want to start a riot in Jerusalem as its population would swell at Passover time, and any violence would get back to Rome. So Herod takes the cowardly action of mocking Jesus to look good in the eyes of the religious leaders, and then passes the responsibility for Jesus back to Pilate. And this is another temptation we face, isn't it? Doing something for no reason other than looking good in the eyes of others. There was no reason for Herod to mock Jesus. Luke chapter 23, verses 13 to 15, we find Pilate saying that neither he nor Herod could find any grounds to charge Jesus with the things he had been accused of. There was no reason that Jesus couldn't be set free. Yet both Herod and Pilate saw the need to mistreat him in order to please the crowd. Now the responsibility for Jesus is now back in Pilate's hands. Therefore he tries a prisoner exchange. In prison awaiting death is a prisoner named Barabbas. Some manuscripts say that his name was Jesus Barabbas, which gives more room for causing confusion in the crowd. Barabbas was a zealot who was guilty of violent crimes, including murder. And Pilate must have felt that the people would not choose such a violent man over the peaceful Jesus. Pilate underestimated the power of the crowd and the mob mentality that had taken over. Douglas Phillips says that Barabbas' prison cell was only 300 yards away from where the crowd was. He heard his name, but not what was said. It is good to put ourselves into the position of this man who was facing certain death. Circumstances pointed to there being no hope for him. When a guard came and told him to get up and come, Barabbas must have thought he was going to his death. Imagine his surprise to hear the guard say that he was free. In some ways, Barabbas is like all of us. We are all guilty of sin, just as Barabbas was. Jesus took Barabbas' place. Barabbas walked free, and Jesus was crucified. Jesus took our place. We are washed clean from our sins, and Jesus was crucified. Whilst we look aghast at the apparent unfairness of these events, let us not forget that Jesus was in full control. He knew exactly what he was doing. Not only was Jesus taking Barabbas' place, he was taking my place, he was taking your place. In Isaiah chapter 53 and verses 5 and 6, we find it says, "But he was pierced because of our transgressions, crushed because of our iniquities. Punishment for our peace was on him, and we are healed by his wounds. We all went astray like sheep. We have all turned to our own way, and the Lord has punished him for the iniquity of us all." Pilate next tried non-capital punishment. Pilate sensed that the crowd wanted blood, so he decided to give them some blood and pain. He hoped that torturing Jesus would satisfy the crowd. Don't forget that Pilate considered Jesus innocent and wanted to set him free. But again, cowardice set in, and fear of the crowd made him order a whipping for Jesus. A footnote in the Bible I use says that Roman flogging was done with a whip made of leather strips embedded with pieces of bone or metal that brutally tore the flesh. By the time the whipping was finished, Jesus, because of previous beatings, was barely recognisable. What Pilate hadn't considered was that flogging was a prelude to crucifixion. No doubt the crowd thought that Jesus was on his way to the cross. This move didn't appease the crowd. Instead, it sent them into a death frenzy. They knew what was to come, and they welcomed it. And finally, Pilate tried to reason with the crowd. Perhaps he should have tried this first, before frenzy took over. John chapter 19 tells us that Pilate brings Jesus battered and bleeding before the crowd and says, "Here is your king. Should I crucify your king?" Pilate was appealing to their sense of ownership. The Romans had taken so much from the Jewish nation, and he was hoping that they would say, "Enough is enough," and that the Romans wouldn't take their king away from them, although they didn't recognise him as the Messiah. The people were looking to Jesus to declare himself a physical king who would lead them against the Romans and return the kingdom to them. When he did not do this, he was less than nothing to them, and they welcomed his death. They were now ready to expel from Jerusalem the king they had welcomed into Jerusalem, with palms the week before. They wanted Jesus crucified. Pilate was wasting his time trying to reason with them. Pilate cannot hide the truth. And in an act of cowardice, he gave in to the pressure of the crowd. Bringing out a basin of water, he washed his hands in an effort to absolve himself of the responsibility for the death of Jesus. However, no matter what we do in an attempt to absolve ourselves of responsibility, we live with our decisions for the rest of our lives. Is Jesus our king? If we make Jesus our king, then we must also sacrifice self. Pilate was making a choice between his career and Jesus. In the world around us today, we are going to be placed in situations where we must choose between compromise with the world or sacrifice our standing with the world and choose Christ. Romans chapter 12, verse 2 says, "Do not be conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may discern what is the good, pleasing, and perfect will of God." If we make Jesus our king, then we must give total allegiance to the king. Jesus couldn't please both the crowd and Jesus, and neither can we. We cannot serve two masters when it comes to what is right. Either the Bible is right or the world is. We cannot pick and choose. Luke chapter 16 verse 13 says, "No one can serve two masters, since either he will hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. We cannot serve both God and money." If we make Jesus our king, our decision will become a reward that only the courageous will know. A decision for Christ means a fresh start and eternal satisfaction. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 verse 17 says, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away, and look, new things have come." New opportunities open up before us. New excitement, the excitement of living, knowing that we are living in the centre of God's will, opens up before us. New things have come. Pilate's final verdict regarding Jesus came at the time of the crucifixion. He followed a common tradition and posted the crime the condemned man was guilty of, and the inscription read, the King of the Jews. In Jesus' case, it seems to have been Pilate's decision rather than the charge. He knew the truth, and he refused to change the wording. The truth is the truth. Pilate showed that we cannot hide it. We cannot deny it, and we cannot change it. The truth is Jesus Christ, King of the Jews. It is a decision we must all make for ourselves. Is Jesus our King?